Good evening. Thank you all for coming. And I think it's still time to wish you all a happy new year. The year is still young. And is that better? And we are very happy to have today with us an old associate of NIAS, Madam Rukmini Srinivas, and she'll be doing greetings from her book, Tiffin, Memories and Recipes of Indian Vegetarian Food. First, I'd like to invite our director, Professor Baldev Raj, to welcome all of you.
Good evening and welcome you all. Wish you blissful, purposeful, and a year in service to your family and society. We are all here because Rukmini Srinivas is here. This place, NIAS, echoes with the memories of Aman Srinivas and Rukmini Srinivas. Aman Srinivas was a tall professional, unparalleled in some ways in his contributions, and more important as a human being, in simplicity, in observations, in communications, in inspirations. We always wish that the saga of Srinivas continues in NIAS with the same commitment, same quality, and same dedication. Just about a week back when I met Rukmini Srinivas, we had very short discussions, but I went back and told Neelu that I met a lady of the kind I have rarely met in my life. She is a person, if I have to use the word complete person, who has been a teacher, who has been a keen observer the way the country and the world is going, who is widely traveled, and who among all has touched many lives to be changed. I think that's the biggest contribution you can make in life. And Sundar Surukai, who's going to be with this event for reading, I admire him. He combines physics and philosophy that many in the world might combine, but to me, Sundar Surukai has always been very unique. He has challenged himself, I believe, to do things which very few people do. And everything he did it with conviction and imagination. So I'm very happy. When I read the book Tiffin, even the photographs were enough to give an experience in my taste buds. But I wish I can eat some of those dishes which is cooked by, not based on recipes, but which are made by Rukmini Srinivas, which would be a tall order. But it's a memoir, it is not just the recipes, it's a memoir, it's a beautiful book. And I think we are going to experience in the next hour or so this beautiful program. I thank you for coming this Friday, be with us and celebrate. In fact, when Rukmini Srinivas came, I just requested her, can we celebrate with all your friends in NIAS, because that would enrich our memories and our commitment to Mrs. Srinivas and you. And she so readily agreed, and it is made possible by her, Dr. Lakshmi, Sundar Surukai, our own colleague Srinivas Aithal, who does the administration and management of the institute. And delighted, and thank you. God bless you with bliss, Rukmini Srinivas, with great life, and your charm grow and grow as you grow. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Professor Baldev Raj, for that very interesting introduction. Now, Lakshmi Srinivas, who has the distinction of watching the book being produced, will be able to give us some insights about how the book came about. We don't know if it's a case of participant observation or non-participant observation. She'll tell us about it.
Thank you, Dr. Baldev Raj. Thank you, Dr. Baldev Raj. It is a great pleasure for my mother and myself to be here today. I would also like to thank Dr. Sundar Sarukai, Dr. Dhanu Nayak, Ms. Hamsa Kalyani, Ms. Stella, Mr. Ramakrishna, Mr. Devaraju, and Mr. Aityal, and everyone else at NIAS who made this event possible. And a big thank you all for coming today. Tiffin, my mother's book, started out with a recipe she sent my sister and I when we went as students to the United States. Blue airmail letters would arrive with recipes, later replaced by email and phone calls, which would invariably be accompanied by anecdotes and reminiscences. At first, while I found the stories diverting and amusing, I didn't think about them much. Only later did I realize their significance. As I learned about family, friends, the social history which came through in the stories, and of course, I learned about my mother. With her vivid accounts of life, descriptions of people, the places she lived in and visited, my mother gave us a social context for the food she had cooked, eaten, and enjoyed with others. While she was writing the book, my mother taught classes on Indian vegetarian cooking and did several cooking shows for Arlington Public Television. Arlington is the suburb of Boston where we live. And these shows were taped at my sister's home. And at first, the lone cameraman and producer were very businesslike. Much of the talk were about the technicalities of filming. But over time, a more relaxed atmosphere developed. My mother would ask the camera crew to taste what she had prepared. She would tell them about the food, its history, and regale them with her stories. The crew grew in numbers. From taping once a month, there were demands for a show once a week. Sometimes the producer would ask for a retake. So another round of vades or another batch of kesari bhat would be made. And as you may imagine, many friendships developed as a result. Even when the manuscript was with the publisher, my mother would routinely receive emails from the editors, saying they had greatly enjoyed trying out the recipes at home and with friends. I'd like to end by saying that my mother is delighted to have her book reading hosted at NIAS, the site of many fond memories for her, and one where she has many, many friends. Thank you.
Now we'll have Sundar Sarukai give us his observations about the book.
Thank you, Naresh. Thank you, Professor Baldev Raj, for this wonderful opportunity to be come back to NIAS to see so many old familiar faces. I should actually say so many familiar faces. There are many, you know, in times of transition, people have come and people have gone. But I was so delighted every time we come back to meet our old friends, colleagues, students. And in today's case, when I was standing outside, seeing many of those people who used to be an essential part of early NIAS times during the associates dinner. So I want to take this opportunity to actually just reflect on that memory. Because if there is anything about this book is a book of memories. Recipes are incidental to memories. And recipes themselves are memories. And to me, when I, I didn't want to talk about the book as such, but when Mrs. Srinivas suggested that I say something about it, I thought of NIAS and of a great tradition which to me defined NIAS to a great extent. And this was, I'm sure many of you who are part of this exercise know about this, but, for those who don't, and for those who are working here, it was such an integral part of the tradition of NIAS. And this tradition was around the idea of tiffin. So There are many names that have been coined for Niyas, as some of you might know. And if you could make a small modification, we might as well call Niyas as National Institute of Advanced Tiffin. Because Tiffin was a central core to the idea of Niyas. And I'll tell you why. When we all came in, there were very few people. When I joined in 94, there were very, very few people at that time. Dr. Ramanna, Professor Srinivas, Professor B.V. Srikantan, Professor C.V. Sundaram were there. And there was one great tradition which I loved as a new faculty when I joined Niyas, and that was the Wednesday seminar meetings. So we used to have talks on Wednesday at 9:30, and promptly at 10:30, 10:45, we would go to this kitchen. The kitchen was a very central core. Without sounding offensive, I must say the kitchen was more important than the library in Niyas for a long time. It was a place where we met and exchanged great ideas and learned to actually understand people. So in the kitchen, after the talk, we would all go there. And we had two wonderful cooks, Satyamurthy and Krishna. Unfortunately, Krishna passed away, but Satyamurthy is still going strong. What we would do after the session was all of us would go sit. And it was a long table. And Dr. Ramanna would sit in the center there at the head of the table. And we would all distribute ourselves around. And we would wait for hot bhajis, vadas, pakodas and stuff. And that is, I think, for many of us, going for lectures was only an excuse so that we could come and have tiffin. And every day when we sat there, on every Wednesday when we sat, and there was very little talk or discussion about the talk we all heard. There was more discussion about those, what food we want to eat then, whether the malha bhaji was sufficiently hot, or whether there was enough oil in them, and so on. And along with those tiffin which we would eat, we would hear stories. And for, you know, young impressionable people like me and some of my young colleagues who had joined then, it was actually opening, it was being opened to a new world. Dr. Ramanna had just come back around that time, a few years back, after being the Minister for Defense. And we had General Paul, I'm so glad to see him here today, who was the first administrator here. And, you know, all of them came with different great stories. And among the stories, which was, you know, something which amused me a lot, and since General Paul is here, he used to come on horse to Niyas. That's what I've heard. I've never seen him on the horse. But, you know, for all of us as young people who came into this institute, these people are all very different kind of people. People whom we could never have had an opportunity to meet. Very major, big legends. You know, on one side, Professor Srinivas, Professor Srikantan, who had come after being the director of TIFR. Professor C.V. Sundaram had retired from Kalpakkam, who was here. Dr. Ramanna and others. And they would be regaling us with so many stories about politics and society and culture and friends and enemies also, which is the best part, best stories we heard were about, you know, these great strifes. So to us, these kinds of tiffin were actually punctuations among stories. Something which, stories which opened up a completely new world to us. I know that the tradition continued for a very long time, and it continues. And the tradition of students coming directly for the, tiffin time is also continues. We've had times in which some students will come just before the end of the talks and they slip in the back and sit so that they don't feel that guilty that they join us when we go and have tiffin. So when Mr. Srinivas suggested this and Professor Baldev Raj, who so kindly agreed to do this, my memory was that of Niyas, of the very early days, of which Mrs. Srinivas was such an integral part. Those long week Friday night dinners with the associates, when we met so many of you who are here today. And, it really made Niyas what it was at those times. The book is so important for a variety of reasons. To me, it's because I'm a foodie, I love food. I love tiffin, but I think there's something very special about tiffin, which I'll take 2 minutes to tell you. And it's also because it's written so beautifully. It's actually so little about recipes. The first time I went through it, I didn't even look at the recipes. I know Ruka is a great cook. I've been a beneficiary of it. But when we When I first read it, I just read it for the stories. And stories are written so beautifully, evocatively. It captures a world which, you know, you have no access to other than through these kinds of reflections. So to me, you know, the question of food, which is very central, I mean, in my own life and my own thinking, many of my students in philosophy often make fun of me because most of the examples I use in my philosophy classes are about food. But food is also a very problematic thing. Food is, you know, when people write, there is of course great literature and great films on food, but somehow food is not essential, seen as something so central to the idea of great literature and great movies and or even great, you know, philosophy and so on. There is something about food which we may take for granted. There is something about food which is so everyday and so common that it transcends an ability to be captured in such wonderful ways. Now, for those of us who like movies and books about food, including, you know, a very good film which, I mean, since we're in Bangalore, you know, the film Oggarane, the Kannada film, you know, these are sporadic incidents which try and capture this magic of food. It's not really about, but Tiffin is not really about food. Tiffin is a completely different category. And part of this point about the Tiffin, the idea of Tiffin being so central and so different from food, is that food, which is generally associated with the idea of memory, and in a very profound sense, in the sense that every time you eat food, you are consuming some memory or the other. It's so difficult for us. And in fact, the worst violence one does to food is when you do not respect the memory that it has, when you take it for granted, when you consume it as if it is something which is there in front of you without this grand stories around it. And food is the material link we make with our history and culture. But in this rich world of food, tiffins have a special place. And to me, they are the essence of foods. There is something special about the nature of tiffin, which eludes the nature of what other food does. And there are very simple reasons why it is so. You do not eat tiffin to fill your stomach. This tiffin item is something which happens in between, which is never the meal in itself, which is always something which stands by while you're waiting for another meal. You finish your lunch and then you want to have tiffin, and then you're waiting for dinner. There is this transient nature, there's something very special nature of tiffin makes me want to think of tiffin as something more than food, because you don't eat food, tiffin, because you're hungry. It's got nothing to do with hunger. And when you read this book, of course, there's a lot of saliva which is produced, but it's still not about hunger. Therefore, in that sense, tiffin captures something special and essential to food, which we don't get when we eat lunch and dinners. Lunch and dinners are to fill our stomach, largely. They do another completely different job than the kind of work which something called tiffin does. So I feel that when I eat tiffin, I actually eat the taste. I feel the heat. It's a very sensorial notion of the texture, the heat and taste. And we can all eat tiffin and we'll just eat two bhajis and finish it. That's it. You don't need to eat to do anything, including filling our stomach. It's just the two bhajis which you have to have. And there is a great sense of satisfaction in just doing that much. And that's not contributing to our nutrition, not contributing to, you know, filling our stomachs and so on. It's contributing to something else to me in a very profound sense. Therefore, if I want to sound very pretentious, I could as well say, you eat tiffin as an existential human condition. I have to sound pretentious because that's my job, and you know. But I think there's something very profoundly existential about the idea of tiffin. Something very, I mean, although the word seems to have come from colonial times, the idea of tiffin, which is, Mr. Srinivas begins with that, is something which is so central to the Indian cultural habits of eating. And therefore, I think we eat tiffin in order to capture a sense of time in our lives. We don't eat tiffin for anything else. Every time of engaging with tiffin is a very different engagement with that kind of time. That eating that goli bhaji at 4 p.m., molaga bhaji at 6 p.m. And between those long moments, between stuffing ourselves in lunch and dinner, we really confront the meaning of quality of meaning and quality of food in those tiffins. We don't understand and engage and experience food in all of other activities of eating food like we do in tiffin. And it is this spirit of tiffin that comes to life in Rukh's book. Unlike a narrative of one life, it's not a history of a life of a person. It's not a great cultural history of places and so on. Unlike the grand narratives of individual societies and places, of individual lives and nations, her book is a recipe of memories, little memories in between major happenings. They're just little memories. They are not, you don't have to look for connections between them. There's a great sense of continuity. But it's not a major drama that happens from beginning to end. Little memories in between major happenings. And the memories, and the beauty of this is that the memories of all these, random events, with seemingly random events, they all appear. So these memories of these random events appear as a masal vadai, a vegetable cutlet, puri bhaji with bakri, bhajis and apams, korakattai, akki roti, avarekai adai, kara obbattu, pineapple goju, ragi dosa, and so on. These are not just dishes. They are recipes which come after the stories. They are recipes packed, rolled, spiced, and deep fried with Rukh's memories. And how sharp those memories are. Obviously, eating all this tiffin has done good for your memory. And at least if for nothing else, seeing her memory and her spirit, if these are the tiffins which she did, you know, I would want to follow this every day of my life. Wonderfully evocative memories, wonderfully sharp observations of world, clarity of seeing another world, invoking a presence of another time, so beautifully. And therefore, these stories themselves are like the perfect dishes. The recipes are secondary. The stories already are prepared as a perfect dishes. They capture, for me, the real taste of living and the textures of cultures. So, this is a, you know, in that sense, a remarkable book because, you know, in these days of super specialization, when everybody builds walls around their disciplines, and you say sociology should be like this, literature should be like this, philosophy should be like this. Here is a book which combines, which breaks these artificial boundaries and invokes a completely different world as very, very loosely, wonderfully captured in the contents, which go on from things like masal vadai and midwifery, a Victorian meat grinder in an Indian vegetarian kitchen, the impromptu tea party about the Deccan Queen, Thair Vada and Idada with Lord Rama and Cinderella in Bombay, and so on. So it's a, you know, in that sense, it is a book which I remember once I told one of my students who is also here, I said, this is the kind of books you should be writing. You know, you should be writing for things like dance, art, music, and so on. This is a kind of book which is not about a kind, you know, way of writing about the world. It's a very different form of writing about the world, which, you know, to me at least was very appealing. I'll just end with these last few points. You know, people say tiffins is bad in these days of health fads. We're all worried about oil, you're worried about everything. This book is also bad for your health. There are such wonderful, simple recipes, but impossible to eat any of them without remembering Rukh's memories of masal vadai, with her first experience of seeing the birth of a baby. That's a wonderful, wonderful story. You know, there's a whole story of first her encounter with masal vadai. Her uncle is making it. And he's also a doctor. In the middle of it, somebody comes and calls him to the Harijan colony there, as discussed in this book, where there's a woman giving birth. So they stop the masal vadai, turn off the stove, run there. And she holds that woman who is giving birth to a child. And she writes, it's her first experience of seeing the birth of a baby on the first time she had masal vadai with that doctor who is, and it's such a beautiful sense of, living those ideas about food, which are embedded in these kinds of, the whole book is about that. I also particularly like this story about traveling in the train from Pune. Her father puts her, you're 8 years or whatever old, or 10, 12 years old, and there's a sister who's 6 or 8. Two of them, young girls, he sees them off in Pune, and it's going to go to Bombay, and they're going to meet their uncle. And she says, my father looks for some adults in the carriage and tells him, take care of them, and he goes off. You know, it's a different world. It's a kind of a different imagination of what was. There's a lot of what was here, but I think there's also a lot of what could be. It's like that kind of a wonderful imagination which dots this book, and which made this book not only so enjoyable, but something so profoundly moving for me. Thank you, Mrs. Srinivas, for this wonderful book. And as I said, to be part of it at NIAS, where we have spent so many years so happily, is an added ogarani, the tadka. Thank you, Professor Baldev Raj.
If we are to take Sundar's exhortation that we take Tiffin more seriously, we'll do what he told us. And if he gave us Tiffin and whetted our appetites, what we'll do after that is not a main course. We'll have some more Tiffin. And now we'll have Ms. Rukmini Srinivas come and do some readings from her book.
Before I start reading, thank you all very much for coming this evening to NIAS, which is such a special place for me. I could go on another story or a few more stories about NIAS and my time here, but I can't afford that luxury this evening. I'd like to thank Dr. Baldev Raj for so graciously hosting this event, for my daughter Lakshmi, who was really the instrument. She used to chivy me and say, Amma, you tell us so many stories. Why don't you put them down so that we could read them and others too could? And then, of course, the recipes, as she said, I used to send them on those aerograms when they were graduate students there. No elaborate meals could be prepared. You have to rush to school. So I would write these short recipes. And as you all know, you're all Indians here, and traditional cooking doesn't have measurements. We just pick up the hand, and the fist is all we use at times, most of the times, a pinch of this, a fistful of that. I had to translate all that into some kind of measurements that they could use. I've tried to do this in the book because this is for a wider audience. And the feedback from people I have not known till now, and even today, somebody came to me and said, I've tried the recipes and they work very well. That is what gives me so much joy. And Sundar, of course, beautifully, beautifully elaborated. I couldn't have done that. He's read the book and he's drawn the essence of the book. I just wrote it, you know. The winters are long in Boston. I haven't been too well these last 3 years. And so I would sit down and write late into the night till 2 and 3 when I couldn't sleep. And they were just jottings of life, what happened then and earlier and later. They went back and forth. That's how they are here. But Sundar has put it beautifully. He has you know, one-upmanship. He's done a great job, I think, of telling you in a short space of time what this book is about. And I hope you will all enjoy reading it. Now, I have chosen two short pieces, and the location being Bangalore. The first I've titled The Return of the Native and Ragi Dose. Can you all hear me? One Friday afternoon. Oh, before I start this, I must tell you that memories of Raja Ramana, Sundaram, Ravi Kapoor, I can't forget all of these people. And Ratna, my dear friend, Sri Kanchan's wife, I don't see them here, but they are in me all the time. And we used to have these Friday evenings, happy hour. Drinks flowed freely, lots of food, and lots of chatter. Serious and not so serious, we would meet and talk late into the night. So also, you know, Chamu used to tell me, oh, it's Wednesday today, Rukha. I can't have an elaborate breakfast. I will have my vade at Nias. So the Wednesday vade was sacrilegious. I mean, you can't do anything. It was such a ritual for all these people that they would set aside lovingly cooked homemade breakfast and come here. But that is Nias. And I think the spirit prevails even today. And when I met Dr. Baldev Raj, I really felt I was with a kindred spirit. He is a scientist of renown, but his feeling for the humanities and social sciences is so well developed. This was a very brief meeting of just a few minutes, but that is what I took back with me. Thank you, Dr. Baldev Raj, for this evening, for giving me the opportunity to meet my friends. The Return of the Native and Ragi Dose. One Friday afternoon in Bangalore, I think it was in June of 1993, Chamu came home from the National Institute of Advanced Studies, where he was a fellow, visibly excited. Makri, his childhood friend, now living in Karachi in Pakistan, was visiting us the following evening at 4 o'clock. We discussed what I should cook for the afternoon tiffin, and I made plans to serve masala dosa and lentil rice crepe wrap with spicy aromatic potato curry tucked in, and Mysore pak, beehive fudge of gram flour and strong Mysore filter coffee. If Makri remains a true Mysorean, he would enjoy this tiffin, said Chamu. Making masala dosa needs advanced preparation work of about 1 day, so I immediately washed and soaked the rice and urad dal, ground for the batter, the night before we went to bed, and left it to ferment on the kitchen counter. On Saturday morning, the slightly sour aroma of fermented batter greeted me as I entered the kitchen. The grandnephew of Inayatullah Makri, a public-spirited freedom fighter from Bangalore, after whom the circle on Bellary Road in Bangalore is named, Chamu's classmate and friend Makri, grew up in Mysore. They were childhood buddies while they were both students in Maramalappa High School in Mysore, and their friendship continued through their years in Maharaja's College, also in Mysore. They played cricket together on the same team. Makri continued to be a frequent visitor to the family home even after Chamu left to join Bombay University for higher studies. In 1949, post-partition of the Indian subcontinent, Mekri moved to Karachi in Pakistan on the insistence of his wife, who had relatives there. Chamu told me this was Mekri's first visit to India since leaving for Karachi. It was an emotional homecoming for Mekri. When he entered our home on Benson Cross Road, he embraced Chamu, reverentially touched the floor, and said, "This is my Matrubhumi, Chamu, my homeland." He drew up a chair, sat me down, and told me stories of his friendship with Chamu, with R.K. Narayan, with Raja Ramanna, the scientist, T.S. Satyan, the photographer, Van Engens, the taxidermist brothers, and other mutual friends in Mysore. Then he turned to me and asked, "Rukmini, nimge Kannada barta? Do you know Kannada? And more importantly, what's for tiffin?" Adding, "Would it be too much of a trouble to make ragi dosa with coconut chutney? I long for the taste of Mysore badami mangoes. These are some food items I have not tasted in decades after leaving Mysore. I was with a friend I had not met." I told myself, Mekri is a true Mysorean. Only a native would long for and appreciate the taste of ragi dosa and badami mangoes, the pride of the state. Ragi dosa was Chamu's favorite too, and I frequently made them for weekend breakfast. The delicate, crisp, chocolate brown finger millet crepes are indigenous to the Mysore region. It was fascinating to hear Mekri and Chamu reminisce about their school days, their trips to Bangalore to watch the Ranji Trophy cricket matches, and their evening forays into the Bandipur jungles to watch wildlife as I made each ragi dosa on the sizzling tawa, the griddle. He ate several of the hot dosas with creamy, smooth coconut chutney and ghee. "Each dosa brings back more memories," he said. He stayed late into the night and left reluctantly close to midnight. I packed a dozen cubes of Mysore Pak in a stainless steel tiffin carrier for him to take. He looked fondly at the tiffin carrier and smiled wistfully. His mother would send his school lunch in a blue three-tiered enamel tiffin carrier, he said. This narrative is followed by a recipe of ragi dosa, for those I'm sure many of you have made several ragi dosas at home, but this is a recipe, and it turns out quite good. I made them in my Arlington home, and the photographer, as my daughter Lakshmi just said, the crew, I had to mix more of the batter. The batter that I'd mixed the first time wasn't enough. They went on saying, "It's so light, Ruka, it's so light." And as each one was served, they'd sit at the kitchen, you know, the central counter there, the island counter. And they'd say, "One more for me, please, one more." And here I was, the batter was over, there's a true story. And I mixed some more. And they said, "So quickly," I said, "Yes. It doesn't need any fermentation. It's mixed and made immediately." So that's the story of ragi dosa. Would you like to hear one more, or am I tiring you all? Just another short one, maybe. Kamalu's Avarekai Adai. The Mysoreans would connect with this. Chamu's cousin Kamalu lived in her own cozy home adjoining her mother's bungalow in the suburb of Malleshwaram in Bangalore. Her two adult sons lived with her on our annual summer visit to Mysore, where Chamu's mother lived, we too would stop for the day to spend time with Kamalu. On arrival at the Bangalore cantonment station in early May, a cool drizzle, typical of the Bangalore weather this time of the year, greeted us. What a welcome change from the enervating heat and dust of the North Indian plains. Driving down tree-lined avenues, hearing the crescendo call of the Indian koels and the mating call of the lineated barbets, which I associated with the monsoon rains, I felt really blessed. Kamalu, on seeing us at her gate, stepped out into the rain-drenched garden, wrapped in a shawl, and welcomed us with a warning. "This is treacherous weather, Chamu. You will fall sick with cold, cough, and flu. So take out your woolies. Bangalore is no longer that Bangalore." The fragrance of freshly brewed coffee greeted us as we entered her home. And even before we unpacked the gifts we had brought her, she produced steaming hot filter coffee in tall metal tumblers. Why was Kamalu's coffee so special? Was it the Mysore coffee beans roasted to perfection and ground fresh every day that preserved and enhanced the aroma? Did the water in Bangalore make a difference to the taste of the coffee? Was the secret hidden in the South Indian filter, which allowed the water to percolate drop by drop, drop by drop, to draw out the essence? Blowing on the dancing froth and warming my fingers on the tumbler, I enjoyed every last drop. Kamalu never approved of our plan to leave in for Mysore the same night. "Why can't you stay a few days here? You've become a stranger to us, Chamu." Her tone was one of hurt. Chamu tried to appease her by promising to return in a couple of weeks. Kamalu was an epicure. Her meals were well planned and tasty. She put herself out, cooking breakfast, lunch, and tiffin on the one day we stayed with her. Our efforts to explain to her that it was impossible to eat three heavy meals in the space of 12 hours fell on deaf ears. She knew one of Chamu's favorite tiffin dishes was avrekai ade, rice flour flatbread studded with local beans, and his preferred dessert was gasgase payasa, a nutty flavored milk pudding with a paste of ground almonds and poppy seeds stirred in. Avrekai is a bean with a particularly rich and oily fragrance. Bangaloreans, Mysoreans, and the people of Tamil Nadu love the flavor of this rich bean. But for many northerners, it is an acquired smell, as my friends would say. Kamalu cooked on a firewood stove, which he kept alive by frequently blowing through a tubular metal blower. She made several crisp, aromatic griddle-cooked flatbreads, which she served straight off the hot griddle with butter and homemade sweet and sour lemon pickle. Chamu's comments after enjoying Kamalu's ade was, "This is food for wrestlers, Kamalu. I must go for a run, or at least for a long walk." Kamalu's recipe for avrekai ade was a well-guarded secret, as I know with many of my elderly friends. Never before had I tasted that kind of ade, nor have I met another person who makes it that well. However, I had tasted her avrekai ade several times to be able to deconstruct it, and Chamu's approving comments on the occasions I've made it made me feel good. But it did make a difference that the ade I made on a gas stove lacked the smoky smell of firewood. And then there is the recipe for avrekai ade. And this is how the stories go. Should I go back and sit down there?
I'm sure people have some questions or some observations to make. They may want.
Yeah, whatever. A few.
A few, yes.
Yes, thank you.
How did you get the recipe for the Africa?
I think somebody's asking.
Do you want to come here?
Portable ones, don't you? Major General Paul, you would have done that.
Why don't you just come here?
I'm sorry, but
you said the recipe for the Avreka Yade was a closely guarded secret, so I was wondering how you managed to get it out of...
I've written there. You know, I tried and tried and tried again.
That's your own.
Because it was Chamo's, one of his favorites.
Okay.
First few times, he'd say, he would never be rude. He was a very gentle person. But in his own roundabout way, he would say, maybe... or maybe this, or maybe that.
Okay.
And so I got the hint.
Okay.
It wasn't good enough. So I would try and try again, a little more of this, a little less of that, you know? But then you can try it from my tiffin book. And I hopefully it would be as good as Kamlu's, but not on a gas stove.
Any other observations or questions?
What's your next book, Rupa?
Who's that asking me?
Sucharita.
Yeah. Should I divulge it now before the audience, or should it be kept?
There is a next one.
Yes, there is. What do I do with the long winters there? Well, thank you.
Hi, I'm here. Can you see me? Oh,
could you stand up?
Okay.
Please.
I had a question. So when I cook, I usually don't use any measurements, and it also depends on the mood of that day, or you know what you're feeling, and you sometimes improvise and you combine ingredients. So I was just wondering how you translate it from. Like when I tried to learn from my mom, that's what would irritate me when she'd say, just put a little of this and, you know, I would get frustrated and I wanted like a tablespoon or a teaspoon measurement. But now when I cook, I myself don't measure and I, you know, just do it with the eye. So how did you translate measuring with the eye into, you know, physical measurements?
Well, I didn't spend much time thinking about it. I really didn't. Hopefully, I said, there's the way I cook, and hopefully it would turn out well. But I did measure when I said 1 cup or 1/4 cup, you know, that I did measure. Because if I don't give measurements for dosa or idli or ade or korakate, it'll be a mess. So for those, I did. But generally... no measurements. I think it's all, as they say, andaz lagao, bas, approximations. But I think they'll turn out well, let me assure you. They'll turn out well, because people have written to me, I've got feedback to say that it's turned out well, so that gives me courage to say so.
An interesting point that may be relevant is that a pioneer in writing about South Indian food, Meenakshi Ammal, in her book, Samaitupar, not just gave measures, though she didn't use familiar systems, she'd use the palam and attock and in unfamiliar measures like that. She also told you how many teaspoons of salt you used for that amount of food. So she got it down to that fine degree of detail.
Yeah, you're right. A friend of my daughter's who lives in San Francisco, Berkeley or somewhere, she found the book. And she said, oh, for the first time, I don't have to deal with olocks. I have Cook and See in Tamil and in English. That was everybody's Bible in those days, you know. But you can't translate Olakh. Right. I don't have an Araku at home.
That's right.
Yeah.
My wife is an admiring colleague of yours from the Bishop Cotton days, and my sons are students of yours, even more admiring from those days. When I listened to you, one thought occurred to me. You must of course know Oliver Wendell Holmes, autocrat at the breakfast table. Was Shamu an autocrat at the breakfast table, or you had him in your hands because you were serving him these wonderful dishes, ragi dosa, etc.?
I didn't follow the latter part because that's where the question lies.
It's an autocrat at the breakfast table.
Huh?
Autocrat at the breakfast table. Somebody sits and there are a number of other people sitting with him and he talks about various things, they discuss various things. It's a breakfast table, a set of people sitting around the table and discussing things. And here is you and your husband discussing around the breakfast table, if you like.
Was he an autocrat, is what you're trying to say?
Yeah.
Who? Who was the autocrat?
Okay.
Oh, no. No. I cooked the food and I talked more than he did. At home, at any rate.
Okay, on that befitting note, maybe we'll finish. I invite Hamsa to give the vote of thanks.
I would like to thank Mrs. Rukmini Srinivas for this memorable evening, which we will all remember for many years to come. The evening has brought back memories of the 1990s of this institute and of Professor M. N. Srinivas, whom we all adored and respected. For me personally, it brought back the memory of a piano recital by Dr. Rajaramanna in this auditorium in the year it was built in 1997. After a delightful concert by Dr. Ramanna, Mrs. Srinivas came up to do the vote of thanks and described the performance so beautifully, the sound of music which resonated in this auditorium and the enchanting experience we had shared, that we were so stunned by those words. We came out of the concert feeling it was the most befitting vote of thanks that we had ever heard. No names were mentioned. It was all about the experience of music. This is still very fresh in my memory. We would like to thank you very much, Mrs. Srinivas, for writing this delightful book for us. We are truly grateful to you for bringing alive through your words the life and times of a period lost to many of us. Who else but you could creatively use food and cooking as a way to do this? Some of us were fortunate to enjoy the hospitality and affection of Professor and Mrs. Srinivas, along with the tiffin items mentioned in the book. I would like to take this opportunity to thank you for all those memorable evenings, the conversations, the creation of long-standing friendships formed around food. My grateful thanks to our director, Dr. Baldev Raj, for inviting Mrs. Srinivas to do this book reading. We thank you very much for all the support and encouragement you've been giving us. I would like to thank Lakshmi for telling us about how the book was born, and Mrs. Srinivas suggested that Sundar should give an introduction. So it was such a wonderful introduction. Thanks to all the admin staff, Aital, Devraj, Ramakrishna, Stellar, Ramesh, Lalu, Arun, and all the support staff. Since it is about tiffin, and like Sundar rightly mentioned, thanks to Satyamurthy and Krishna, who have been making those delicious vadas non-stop for last two decades. I would like to thank Naresh for agreeing to be the master of ceremonies today. I'd like to thank my colleague Rajesh for making slides. Lastly, thank you all for braving Bangalore traffic and coming to Niyas this evening, making this occasion a memorable one. Thank you.
Thank you, Hamsa. Hamsa, here. Hamsa, I failed in my duty when I didn't formally mention your name. you are the moving spirit behind this whole thing. So many phone calls and emails. A big thank you to Hamza.